Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. Monsteropolis is a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm joined by my co-host.
Shaft.
Yeah. Can you dig it?
A.K.A. Mark Matzke.
No one has ever called you Shaft.
I hope not. That'd be really awkward.
Unfortunate, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little racist.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. I'd be offended.
Yeah, I'm offended for you. This is, we're in the throes, the finale of the four episode long Month of Love, wherein we've been discussing stories and subjects that we adore. We started with the Chestnut Ridge, and then we talked about the Sierra Sounds, and then we talked about the Majestic 12, and this week we're talking about 70s Sasquatch cinema, which is fitting because we're into the month of March, and beginning later this month, or possibly next month, we will begin filming Momo, the Missouri Monster for Small Town Monsters, which is our throwback to 1970s Sasquatchploitation, as I've started calling it. So this week we're going to talk about 70s Bigfoot cinema, and I think we're coming at this from two different places, because I didn't grow up with any of this stuff, and I've come to it, and I'm not hey, don't take that the wrong way, I'm not insinuating you're old, I'm just saying I came to this in the last like 3 years. Mm-hmm. and you've grown up with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're old.
Because I am old, let's face it.
You look considerably younger than me, but but you're actually slightly older.
That's my shtick. The young looking old
youthful
guy.
Youthful. So yeah, we're going to talk about this, and I don't know how to do this. I'm assuming it's going to be similar to what we did with the UFOs and film conversation, where we kind of just jump into it and figure it out as we go. But the fact is, like, let's, I guess, talk about our history with Bigfoot cinema. Start us off. Like, what, you know, like, when did you discover movies about Bigfoot? Did it influence your...
Yeah, it really is mostly TV oriented, which I think is probably the case. There's probably a generation just before mine that it really was movie, theater, Bigfoot, you know, viewing that got them into it. But in my case, it was TV and sort of the remnants of the 70s Bigfoot cinema culture. Having said that, my first exposure to any sort of filmic Bigfoot was a 70s Saturday morning show by Sid and Marty Croft called Bigfoot and Wild Boy, which was the perfect thing at the perfect time, because it was a kid. His parents get killed in an airplane crash, and he essentially is raised by Bigfoot in Northern California, and they solve crimes and stuff and have adventures. And so that really quickly propelled me, because I was 5 or 6 years old at the time watching that. And then $6 Million Man was on at the same time, which had a Bigfoot character. He ended up being like a cyborg, which was hugely disappointing to me.
Who played...
It's two people, actually. Okay. One was Andre the Giant.
Okay.
And the other, I can't remember if it was Ted Cassidy or one of those guys. But from there, it was catching the Bigfoot episodes of In Search Of that were hugely influential. And then there was the occasional Bigfoot documentary that would be shown as a rerun or on an independent station. And some of those I saw, and I really didn't know what I was seeing. I just like luckily happened into seeing a few Bigfoot reenactments and being very excited about that. Really was the book by Elwood Bauman that was a Scholastic Bigfoot book that talked about the legend of Boggy Creek that was sort of the true introduction to Sasquatch cinema. And it described in detail the making of Charles Pierce's Legend of Boggy Creek. And that sent me on pretty much probably a 5 to 6 year hunt to see the movie, because it was no longer in theaters at that point. And it just so happened that the advent of the VCR and being able to record movies, a local station I saw looking through listings was going to show Legend of Boggy Creek at like 3 a.m. So set the tape to record it and recorded it and watched it. And that was really the intro moment. This would have been in the 1980s, somewhere early 80s. And seeing that was just really the extremely important moment, because it was everything that Bauman described and more, although there were a few misreportings in the book that later I would come to find out weren't exactly the case, like the sound. In the book, it was the sound of the beast was, actual recorded vocalizations of the creature that ended up not being true at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Lyle is the one who hit me to that. But be that as it may, I mean, the recreations in Legend of Boggy Creek are, still, for my money, they're hard to beat because of what the creature looks like, and the brevity with which you see it is the best.
We'll get to Boggy Creek because that's going to probably play a big role here.
Yeah. So from there, I mean, we very quickly entered the era of, VHS and DVD and reading, finding out what are other Bigfoot movies out there, and it became very easy in sort of the on-demand era to watch whatever we wanted to watch, and that'll lead into probably towards the end some of the films we'll be talking about. Now, the good news for anybody who's interested in seeing some of the more obscure movies is that lots of them are on YouTube today.
Yeah.
How about you?
Hey, Mark, let me tell you.
Please do.
I got into the 70s stuff maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it would have been right around the time we made Minerva. And Minerva was supposed to reflect those 70s, especially In Search Of, I think. But it definitely would have been at that time that I started watching the 70s stuff. And I don't even think I had a great appreciation for it then. It wouldn't have been until I watched The Legend of Boggy Creek when we were making Boggy Creek Monster. And I became so infatuated with The Legend of Boggy Creek that I would take naps and listen to it. Mm-hmm. Just so I could kind of like continue dwelling in that world while we were making the movie and try to focus on, the stories and how that movie feels and things like that, so we could integrate that into our movie. But what surprised me about The Legend of Boggy Creek was like how well it was shot. And that's going to come up again here in a minute when we get into the actual movies themselves. But it would have been like just recently, just in the last few years, that I really started watching the 70s stuff and gaining an appreciation for it. And also like gaining an appreciation for the music and the kind of unnerving creepiness of what is otherwise very cheesy music. Like there's something creepy. Brandon called yesterday so we could have a Momo music meeting. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about that, like the synth kind of like weird aspect of the music back then creates this like very unsettling kind of feeling. Even though it's cheesy and they're doing things badly, it's still mm-hmm. weird. So anyway, it's recent. But so we maybe end with like what some of our favorites are, and I'm sure we'll sprinkle it throughout, but like,
sure.
What sets the 70s? So the 70s isn't where Bigfoot movies are introduced. There were Yeti movies and Abominable Snowman movies far before the 70s. But what is it about the 1970s that sets it apart from like modern day or 1980s even Bigfoot movies mm-hmm. and anything prior to that? What is it about some of these that we consider cult classics today. And you can include documentaries in there because I'm going to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think one huge element of it is that you have the setting. Like you said, it transitions from Abominable Snowman and Nepal and Mount Everest as the principal setting. You're bringing that to North America, and typically the Pacific Northwest becomes the setting of some of these films, obviously not all of them. And so it becomes sort of a parallel streams of documentary film that takes the subject pretty seriously and is most interested in recreating some of the more prominent tales, as well as whatever, like, they had access to Patterson-Gimlin film. That's kind of a standard thing that you'd put in the like the introduction portion of the film. And then at the same time, there's developing, you know, starting in 1970, you have Pacific Northwest-based fictional films where Bigfoot is either reacting to people kind of invading his territory and defending with murderous intent, or just straight up being a killer from the beginning. And it's not until the late 70s that you get into the theme of Bigfoot in a fictionalized setting as sort of a defender, like a protector, not only of the forest, but of human children. And that definitely carries into then the 80s with movies like Harry and the Hendersons, where that becomes super obvious. But
so many people, too, are influenced by the 70s that are into the subject today. And not just like Bigfoot researchers, but filmmakers. Like, there's filmmakers who love the subject. Bobcat Goldthwait talks about Legend of Boggy Creek and Creature from Black Lake. So does Eduardo Sanchez talked about The Legend of Boggy Creek as being a huge influence on the Blair Witch Project. So, like, you've got people that aren't even necessarily into the community or part of the community who their interest in Bigfoot as a cultural figure sort of began in the 70s with these movies. But I mean, you got to talk about The Legend of Boggy Creek because it comes out in 1972. It comes out in 70. It was shot in 71. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then comes out in 72. And it was made for $100,000 or thereabouts. And it makes millions at the box office and becomes the most successful, like dollars to donuts. It becomes the most successful movie up to that point made, and probably wouldn't be topped until I would think something like Star Wars, or maybe even that might not have been
Jaws
topped.
And stuff.
Yeah. Because like those movies are, but the interesting thing about Legend of Boggy Creek, and something we've talked about a lot, and this seems to run the gamut here. A lot of these movies, or most of them, are independent. Like they're independent. Like Creature from Black Lake is an independent movie. So is Snow Beast is something else. But the documentaries, especially, are all independent productions. Howco gets involved and things like that. But it's typically what happens is a filmmaker goes out with their own money. They make a documentary and then they sell it to like Howco or some other, you know, production company, and then it becomes something else. But these are almost all independent productions, especially The Legend of Boggy Creek, which is created by Charles Pierce in 1971 on a what we would consider today kind of a big budget, but on back then was a minuscule budget due to the cost of film, and they turn this massive profit, and the film stays in release, by the way, up through like 75 or something. They were still doing reruns on it in theaters. I think into the early 80s it was still occasionally playing. So that influences an entire bunch of filmmakers to go out and start trying to replicate that. So you've got Legend of Boggy Creek in 72, and then you've got Creature from Black Lake is 75. Is that correct?
Yeah, that came 76.
76. Well, I'm nailing it tonight. 76. And that was made by Bob McCullough.
Jim McCullough.
Jim McCullough. Yeah, that guy. And that, if I'm not mistaken, at least from what I could read about it, seems to be an independent production.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like Charles Pierce, features a song sung by the director.
Yeah.
Yep. And I just watched Creature from Black Lake while Adam was up because we were trying to get in that 70s okay. like Momo mindset. So this is why this is something I wanted to talk about. And this would extend to some of the documentaries. But the cinematography and just general quality being put into the movies is actually impressive mm-hmm. to me. I've always said that about The Legend of Boggy Creek as an independent film. There are shots in that movie that are gorgeous.
Yeah.
Especially the bookending scenes with the little boy and then coming back as an older man. I've always found those bookends really touching, but like beautifully shot. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of an homage to that in Terror in the Skies, actually. So, but they're not. It's interesting because we're doing Momo, and Momo's supposed to have this very 70s. Grimy indie film vibe to it, right? So when you think of that, you think of like handheld camera work and like scratches and dents and like things are going to be out of focus and all that stuff. But that isn't the case with either The Legend of Boggy Creek or The Creature from Black Lake. There are the handheld shots and all that stuff, but something I noticed, especially with Creature from Black Lake, is like there are very extended sequences where the camera's locked down on sticks where the framing is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about the guy that directed Creature from Black Lake. I don't know if you do, like what he did after
Not the director, but the director of photography.
Okay.
Goes on to work on John Carpenter's Halloween.
No way. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that explains a ton.
Yeah.
Because Halloween is gorgeous.
Right.
A
lot of the same techniques wow. are used
yeah.
between the two films.
Yeah.
That's
the creature POV shots
yeah,
are echoed later. And that's something we're going to do with Momo is the creature POV mm-hmm. shots. Cause that's something that actually pops up a lot during 70s horror.
Right.
But when the point is like, when you think of like B cult classic movies, I don't think it's necessarily what people might get if they watch The Legend of Boggy Creek or Creature from Black Lake. Those are two very well-made movies. And mm-hmm. even Adam commented when he was watching Creature from Black Lake on how good the acting is.
Right.
It's not what you would expect from... It's like there's cheesy stuff in both of these movies, mm-hmm. obviously, and I would never say that Legend of Boggy Creek is expertly acted, but
right.
Creature from Black Lake is. Like, I think the acting, especially from the two leads, is great.
They somehow got great actors for that film. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had... The two leads. Dennis yeah. Fimple is the Pahu, kind of the funny guy,
yeah.
you know, and he was in One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. He was in the King Kong remake in the 70s. Hmm. I mean, he was well known in Hollywood circles.
Has he passed away? Is he still around?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious about Creature from Black Lake because unlike Legend of Boggy Creek, I don't think there's as much information out there about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm curious to know how much it was inspired by real events. Was it? Do you know any of that? Like, was it inspired by?
There's quite a bit of information in David Coleman's book, The Bigfoot Filmography.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Not so much inspired by real events, but of course influenced by Legend of Boggy Creek.
The culture of the time.
Incredibly, so. And you know, filmed at Caddo Lake,
mm-hmm.
so it's the same approximate location. And I think there is that similarity between the films.
Oh yeah, yeah. The funny thing to me was that Creature from Black Lake opens with a couple shots that look like they're from our Boggy Creek monster movie. Like we had gone out and intentionally, and we didn't. I did not see Creature from Black Lake until mm-hmm. after we'd shot our movie. But the opening shots moving through the swamp are almost identical to the way our movie opens with Lyle narrating about the forests and swamps and all that mm-hmm. stuff and the creature that it's just, I just think the quality of those two movies specifically is much, much stronger than what most people might consider when they're thinking of like Sasquatch exploitation from
sure.
the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think thematically in both cases, but more pronounced in Creature from Black Lake is there's broad humor, right? I mean, even some slapstick type stuff, but never at the creature's expense and never, you know, never making the hunt seem silly or sophomoric. So it's able to kind of get that middle ground just right. It's fun and it's a fun movie to watch, but it's also that last third is pretty suspenseful.
Yeah, except for the fact that he goes off and loads his gun for like 15 minutes. I'm sitting there watching this like, what is this idiot doing? Like, he's just putting some shells in there. It shouldn't take that long.
Right, but he had a broken arm or something, didn't he?
Not yet.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No, I'm talking about before the attack begins. He leaves Pajo and goes off to the van, and then he's just sitting on the side of the van, like slowly putting shells in. Pajo's screaming off in the distance somewhere.
Yeah.
The other thing that stands out about both of them is they're dripping with that atmosphere. Like there is a very, especially Legend of Boggy Creek, mm-hmm. obviously. I mean, Legend of Boggy Creek in a lot of ways will always remind me of Minerva Monster, because like he's working with what he's got and he's making it work in favor of the film. So mm-hmm. like they had a crappy costume, so you keep it out of focus or you keep it in the shadows. We didn't have a costume at all, so the atmosphere of the locations becomes the atmosphere, you know, your production budget goes toward that or whatever. And he really like knew how to emphasize and work with what he had. Charles B. Pierce did mm-hmm. on The Legend of Boggy Creek. So,
and you know, the other element that goes along with that is, you know, I said at the top that one of the things that, you know, makes 70s Sasquatch cinema so unique is that it takes you from, you know, Nepal to the Pacific Northwest, but immediately in 72, you're being taken from the Pacific Northwest to Falk, Arkansas.
Yeah.
And so many people who are influenced by that film say the same thing, which is it made me look at my own surroundings in a completely new way, that if there can be a Bigfoot down in Arkansas in the swamp, then there can be one outside my house.
Well, yeah, and in In On the Trail of Bigfoot, like it's talked about that is where the idea of Bigfoot as maybe a countrywide phenomena first comes into play. Like it's not really before that moment, unless you're talking about the 1930s or the 1800s Wild Men and Ape reports, which weren't considered Bigfoot. That came along later, but this is the first time. Between the 1950s and then the 72 where Legend of Boggy Creek comes out, that's the first time where all of a sudden like people are like, oh crap, this thing might be in the swamps in Arkansas. It's a little bit longer until it hits the East Coast. It's another couple of years, probably mm-hmm. around like Beast of Whitehall or something like that. But the Legend of Boggy Creek in a lot of ways opened the eyes of the country to the idea that this might be something much larger than just the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
The documentaries at the time, I have the same sort of opinion of, and there are a ton of really cheesy documentaries from this era, but there's a couple that I think, I would say the four I'm going to discuss today are not just good movies or, you know, they're all going to have their downsides, but I don't think these are just good movies. I think they're important historical documents. The Man Beast, Mysterious Monsters, In Search of Bigfoot, not In Search of, but In Search of Bigfoot, and In Search of. Those are like, In Search of is a TV show, but those are the four that I always come back to. And there's others that I've watched. There's Bigfoot, The Legend of Bigfoot. There's Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot. There's multiple documentaries. One of those has interviews with the miner. What's his name? One of them has an interview with Fred Beck, and there's so some of these documentaries are actually important historically because you can go back and see interviews of people who've passed away. But Mysterious Monsters, In Search of Bigfoot, and Man Beast are all very well shot and take this subject very seriously, almost too seriously.
Yes. Yeah. Man Beast especially.
Yeah. They all take it very, very seriously. My favorite of these has become In Search of Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And again, that's In Search. I should have just left the TV show In Search of out for now, which I guess I will. So we're just talking about Mysterious Monsters, In Search of Bigfoot, and Man Beast. Mm-hmm. But In Search of Bigfoot is one that I had found last year in 2017 at the Bigfoot Bonanza. Is that what it was called? Bigfoot Bonanza? I'm blanking. Out in San Francisco, the Bigfoot Film Festival.
should be called that. If
yeah,
it's not.
I'm pretty sure it is. And it was at the Balboa Theater, and I watched this movie, and he had a beautiful cut of it. It was like a fully restored print of that movie. And I kept asking him, like, what is this? And he said, In Search of Bigfoot. So I went home and I searched In Search of Bigfoot, and that was not what I watched. And and then I found it again more recently. And then before you and I went to the Pacific Northwest, we found it the night before we left, and we watched the entire movie. And the thing that stood out to me is it is a completely straightforward documentary. There's no recreations. It's literally just following Robert Morgan and his team, like, looking for Bigfoot near Mount St. Helens. And it goes into a little bit of, like, the history of the subject and stuff. But it is, there is none of the frills of, like, those typical, like, Mysterious Monsters has all the extra stuff, or Man Beast. This has none of that. It's there are entire documentaries like Bigfoot, The Search for, or is it Bigfoot, the Legend of, how does The Legend of Bigfoot? That's what it is. The Legend of Bigfoot. The Ivan Bigfoot. Marks one.
Yeah.
Which is a very silly documentary. One I have a hard time watching. I don't even know that I could call it a documentary, since it's sort of a faux.
Yeah, but if you're interested in the subject, you should watch
because
it's hilarious. I love.
Yeah.
I was looking at that again for today.
Yeah.
And I just could not get over his narration.
Yeah.
Where he's, what a load of bunk that is. I mean, that's ridiculous. How can they say that?
That movie's weird because it is a Legend of Boggy. It's essentially doing the same shtick as Legend of Boggy Creek without any of the excitement or action.
Right.
So it's like they're making a faux found footage movie almost, or like faux documentary with nothing exciting happening for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, this In Search of Bigfoot, I really strongly recommend it, because it's actually really eye-opening as far as like how the search for Sasquatch was handled in the 70s. And this is like the most straightforward way you're going to see that relayed through film anywhere, because it just doesn't go with any of the frills.
It puts you right there in those places, mm-hmm. in sort of a pre-eruption Mount St. Helens and Ape Canyon area. It's beautiful to look at. It's a pretty good print that we watched, I think.
There's a better one. I'm curious to see. Did you get your DVD yet?
Did
you watch that?
It's pretty good.
Okay, I need to get that, I guess. Mm-hmm. The one we watched on YouTube, this is on YouTube, and Henry May actually even has it uploaded to his channel. So you can find it. Just be aware that if you search In Search of Bigfoot and you come up with like a 20-minute result, that's the old Leonard Nimoy mm-hmm. show, not this movie. Mysterious Monsters is great, cheesy, fun. It's going to be a huge influence on Momo, especially because of the Peter Graves thing. The recreations in that are kind of creepy because of the music getting so creepy. But there isn't a ton I can say about that. Man Beast is really, really fun because it does take the subject so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this like almost godlike view of like the Bigfoot subject. It opens with like these three, like a Bigfoot family.
Right.
It's really interesting.
The Earth is 4 billion years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, okay.
Right. let's get into it.
Yeah. You know, going back to Mysterious Monsters for a second.
Yeah.
The recreations in that are so good, I think, because mm-hmm. the most famous one, I think, is the Boy Scout troop.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who's seen that, I think, would just be absolutely, you'd think twice about sleeping in a sleeping bag out in the open ever again after seeing that. And trivia about that movie is that it began life as a movie called Monsters, Mysteries, or Myths, and Rod Serling was the narrator.
Right.
And then it was,
I think I've seen that version. Does that exist?
Yeah, it exists. That's on YouTube.
I've seen that version.
Yep. Okay. And then right after it came out, Rod Serling passed away, and then they wanted to add more to it. So that's how Peter Graves got involved. They removed all of Rod Serling's narration.
That is interesting about these movies is they get shifted around and chopped up and reused in other movies. Because In Search of Bigfoot, I was telling you, is reused in one of these other documentaries I watched.
Yeah. Yeah. And right, because In Search of Bigfoot, according to David Coleman, it started out as Bigfoot Man or Beast. And that was strictly the Robert W. Morgan stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think what makes it In Search of Bigfoot is that stuff at the end, that panel discussion that stuck at the end of that, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So yeah, that's it. So Man Beast, let's go back to that. Because that's the thing that I really, because I saw that a long time ago on TV, and I knew it was out there because of some of the recreations, but I could never put together what documentary that was.
There's a ton of them.
Yeah.
And like we said, some of them are reusing footage, so it gets real confusing because you're trying to figure out if this is one you've already seen.
Yeah. And I knew it was the one where the Russian Bigfoot or Almas is in the house. And so I was really very happy to find out that that was Man Beast, Myth or Monster, because then I got to rewatch that because that's just been living in my memory for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it really was a part of a movie. But, you know, Peter Byrne takes center stage for this, which I find very, very intriguing.
Out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And really goes in depth. I mean, he's talking with his wife.
Well, is Man Beast the one where Man Beast isn't the one where there's the kill or no kill debate?
Oh, that comes into it.
That's in Man Beast?
Yeah.
Okay. Between DeHinden and Green and Morgan?
No.
Okay.
That's In Search of Bigfoot.
Okay.
But there is a kill, no kill debate because Byrne goes to a Bigfoot convention.
That's right.
And it sort of breaks out there. And, you know, there's one guy who's just so directly, we need to kill one. And who cares if it's the last one?
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. He's like, who cares if it's the last one? Because no one believes it's
to
real
that
anyway.
Point, if it's to the point where there's literally one last one.
Yeah.
Like,
he's like, kill it.
Yeah. Gotta do what you gotta do.
Wow. And the other thing about Man Beast is that's what I was alluding to in the Sierra Sounds episode. They have a recreation of Al Berry going into the shelter, and then they play the actual Sierra Sounds vocalizations. And this is 1978 that's going out. So that kind of blew my mind, too.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just love the Bigfoot suits in this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's the thing about Creature from Black Lake, just to jump back to that, is when you first see it, if they actually kept the face of the Creature from Black Lake off camera the entire movie, it would be the most successful creature costume, Bigfoot costume on film because the arms and legs look fantastic. I don't know if that's hair glued onto skin or if it's synthetic, but it is really well done. Like whatever they did, it's got muscle movement and all this stuff and it looks super creepy. It's very like what you picture a skunk ape looking like, but then they show the face and it kind of ruins it. But the docs all have their own unique take on the Bigfoot suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the big reveal in Creature from Black Lake is such a letdown.
Pretty underwhelming, yeah.
That's too bad. But, the suits, I guess, were designed for Man Beast by Rob Bottin, who worked on John Carpenter's The Thing later on.
Carpenter keeps coming up.
He does. And so he was going places. And that, the thing about Man Beast is you've got recreation after recreation of daytime sightings where there's nowhere for the suit to hide.
And they hold up.
Really well, especially the faces.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And even the ones like towards the end, there's a lady who's fishing by the river.
Yeah.
And Bigfoot comes up to her and she points a gun at it and stuff. And it looks at her like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, it's just really, really well done. I guess it had $1 million budget.
Wow.
When it came out. Because it's Alan Landsberg who's In Search of, and he also did this film.
I wonder what it made.
Because
these had a life in theaters. This isn't like today where documentaries just automatically go to like VOD. Like at this point in time, they would run double features of Mysterious Monster and Legend of Boggy Creek at drive-ins and stuff like that. So these had an audience that were aware of them and wanted to watch documentaries, which is different from today.
And I just want to make sure that, you know, we let you know that Man Beast is on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, that's the only way that you can see it.
Yeah, I couldn't find it on Amazon. Mm-mm. I was hoping I could find a nice cut of it. So the Creature from Black Lake on YouTube is terrible. Mm-hmm. If you go on Amazon Prime, the version that's on there is clear as can be. Like, it's a really nice transfer.
Yeah.
And everything about it impressed me when I rewatched it. Creature from Black Lake. Favorite top five Bigfoot anything from the 70s. TV, movie, whatever.
Wow. And then there's a movie I wonder if you know exists.
Okay.
That we have to talk about.
But no, go ahead. We'll do that now. Then.
Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know about Bloodstalkers?
Maybe not.
Okay.
Is this about campers? Is this a short?
This is a full-length feature film.
No, I don't know about this.
Came out in 1978. It is full-on grindhouse exploitation, almost slasher.
No way.
And guess who produced and directed it? Robert W. Morgan.
No.
He even is in a supporting role as a poacher.
Where can I watch this?
YouTube.
Okay, yeah, we're doing that.
Tonight. It is disturbing. It's really disturbing.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is it bloody?
Yeah, it is bloody.
Wow.
It is, you know, two couples go down to the Everglades. Mm-hmm. This guy wants to go to this old cabin that his grandparents used to have. And they have trouble finding it. They run into locals who say, don't go down there because the Bloodstalkers will get you.
No way.
And so I won't spoil it except to say, you know, by today's standards, it would have to be like a hard PG-13, if not an R rating. So, you know, parents with small children, you probably don't want to throw Bloodstalkers up on YouTube. But I just could not believe it. And that's a connection that I, again, learned through David Coleman's Bigfoot filmography.
There's a movie I found out about because forcesofgeek.com has a 70s Sasquatch cinema thing called Screams of a Winter Night.
Oh, yes.
Okay, and there's a short. It's an anthology, but one of the stories is about a Bigfoot. And mm-hmm. I haven't got to see it yet, but I really want to check it out. Okay, top five Bigfoot anything from the 70s.
Anything. Okay. I'll go with number one, of course, is The Legend of Boggy Creek. It's just, you know, the definition to me of lightning in a bottle as far as what you set out to make and what it ends up being. I don't think, I mean, Pierce had a film in mind, but it just became something more culturally important than he could have ever imagined. And the impact is pretty huge. Two would be Creature from Black Lake. I'm tremendously fond of that film. And it's successful for the reasons that we talked about. Probably three would be Man Beast, Myth or Monster. I really enjoyed getting back in touch with that film, and I love how closely it follows Peter Byrne and stuff and kind of brings a whole bunch of things together. Number four would be a movie we haven't even talked about really yet, and that is Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot, which is a film that is doing two things at once. It's a fictionalized account of a search party going out to try and trap Bigfoot.
It's great.
And it has recreations in it.
It's got a killer poster, too.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's one of the most, I think, ubiquitous images of Bigfoot online, I mean, whether people acknowledge it as
Minerva
the poster.
The Minerva Monster poster was a bit of a ripoff of that.
Yeah. And so it has, you know, it has this sort of travelogue, outdoor adventure, Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom feel to it, but it also has these recreations that are exceptionally well done.
And interviews.
Like Ape Canyon.
And interviews with
the
actual people that were there for some of these. The Ruby Creek thing is in this one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Right. It's a great, great movie.
Yeah. So I would, and their fictional Bigfoot, they're okay, but they wisely do the keep them in the shadows for the most part, so you're not getting a really good look at them. For, I'd say five would probably be monsters slash the mysterious monsters, just because of the recreations. And has some just classic 70s touches, like, you know, Bigfoot smashes through the door and then it's a freeze frame.
Yeah.
And then there's narration over the freeze frame of Bigfoot, like, looking through the destroyed door, which I think is just stuff like that is what makes the 70s so wonderful.
Yeah. Legend of Boggy Creek would be in mine. Mysterious Monsters, I always come back to. In Search of Bigfoot, I would put in there. In Search of the Swamp Stalker or something like that. It's the one where they talk about the Honey Island Swamp Monster and all that. In Search of.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one. That's four. And then I would probably go with Man Beast at five. Mm-hmm. I love Creature from Black Lake, but it's still not quite at Boggy Creek levels. I just love the docs, honestly. The documentaries are what I really adore from that time period. So, okay. Great era of Bigfoot cinema. If you haven't checked any of these out, we strongly recommend you watch them, and we might have to revisit this subject at some point and get a little more in depth on some of the lesser known films. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter. The Kickstarter is probably done by now, but if it's still open through March 9th, I don't know when this is coming out. feel free to back. So thanks for listening, listeners.
He always travels the creeks.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.